So we're continuing reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the Madhya Lila, chapter number 4, entitled Sri Madhavendra Puri's Devotional Service. And we're reading today text number 61. I'll just read number 60 and then we'll do 61 together. So this is 60. After all auspicious, inauspicious things were driven away by the chanting of the mantra, the deity's bathing ceremony started. First, the deity was massaged with a large quantity of oil so that his body became very glossy. This is a very wonderful section. We are reading about Madhavendra Puri, who was such a Vaishnav because Krishna came to Madhavendra Puri on multiple occasions. He came in the form of a cowherd boy. Then later on, he came in the form of a dream. And then later on, he appeared in the form of the deity, Gopal. And as Madhavendra Puri discovered the deity, then immediately installed the deity without any hesitation and began an amazing worship of Sri Gopal. So we're reading from text number 61. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Shilesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki. After the first bathing, further bathings were conducted with Panchagavya and then with Panchamrita. Then the Mahashnan was performed with ghee and water, which had been brought in 100 pots. So describing all about how Madhavendra Puri was bathing and doing Abhishek of the Gopal deity, purport. The ingredients of Panchagavya are milk, yogurt, ghee, cow urine, and cow dung. All these items come from the cow. Therefore, we can just imagine how important the cow is, since its urine and stool are required for the bathing of the deity. The Panchamrita consists of 5 kinds of nectar: yogurt, milk, ghee, honey, and sugar. The major portion of this preparation also comes from the cow. To make it more palatable, sugar and honey are added. Reminder to all the devotees doing mango transfer. Feel fortunate to have the opportunity to say something. So with your permission of all the senior devotees here as well, Godrima Prabhu, Jai Krishna Prabhu, Jagat Priya Mataji, all the wonderful devotees, I pray for your permission and blessings to say something. Let's just rewind a little bit before we talk about Gopal, and let's rewind a few thousand years. Let's rewind to probably what was the darkest day in the history of the universe. Can you think what was the darkest day in the history of the universe? India lost the World Cup. The darkest day in the history of the universe was the day that Krishna left the planet. The day that Krishna left the planet was the day Kali Yuga began. And when Krishna left the planet, Krishna svadham upagate dharma gnana dibi saha. When Krishna leaves, then dharma and gyan also leave. But not to worry, because kalo nasta drisham esha purar narko dhuno dita. Still in this darkness, now Krishna has left, one can get light from Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna left the world and Kali Yuga began. Everyone was plunged into separation. I mean, death in itself is very difficult when someone departs the world. So can you imagine when the Supreme Lord, the most enchanting personality in the entire creation, leaves the world? How painful that must be. What kind of separation one must overcome someone? So all of Krishna's associates were plunged into depression. The Pandavas lost all enthusiasm to continue ruling the universe. Krishna has gone to his own abode. We should also prepare to depart. So Yudhisthira decided, time to renounce the kingdom. Yudhisthira left the Pandavas left along with him. And who did they install upon the throne? The great devotee who saw Krishna at his very birth, who throughout his life remembered Krishna, and who at the end of his birth, end of his life, would remember Krishna, the great Parikshit. So Parikshit was installed on the throne of Hastinapur, and on the throne of Mathura, Vajranab was installed. Vajranab was the great grandson of Krishna. Krishna and his principal queen, Rukmini, had a son called Pradyumna. Pradyumna had a son called Aniruddha, and Aniruddha had a son called Vajranab. So when Krishna was leaving this world, before Krishna decided to leave the world, the first thing he had to do was remove his whole family. Because he thought, if I leave the world and my whole Yadu dynasty is here, anything could happen. They could take advantage of their influence, power. No one will be able to overcome them. The Yadu dynasty are so powerful that they're invincible. No one can kill them. Therefore, Krishna thought, I have to remove them. But no one can kill them. So how to remove them from the world? I have to make them kill each other. So Krishna arranged a whole situation by which they got into a drunken brawl. It's like a Saturday night drunken brawl 5,000 years ago. And they killed each other. Even Krishna and Balaram got into the brawl as well. But obviously, they survived. But practically the entire Yadu dynasty was annihilated. But Vajranab was one of the few remaining survivors of the Yadu dynasty. So he was installed on the throne of Mathura. Pandavas left. Parikshit began ruling at Hastinapur. Vajranab began ruling at Mathura. One day Parikshit went to see Vajranab. He said, we're good friends. Because who was Parikshit's grandfather? Arjun. And who was Vajranab's great-grandfather? Krishna. It's like, so our relatives were great friends, so we're also good friends. And not only that, Vajranab learned his archery skills from, you know who? Abhimanyu. So I mean, Abhimanyu was the son of Arjuna, which is like, my God, like the best archer in creation. So Vajranab learned from Abhimanyu. So like this, Vajranab and Parikshit were good friends. They had a good connection. So Parikshit came to Vajranab one day and he said, how's it going? How is ruling the kingdom going? Vajranab said, it's fine, but there's only one problem in my kingdom. There's only one problem in Mathura. Everything is going fine, but there's just one small problem. There ain't no one here. Because like, I mean, got a whole kingdom, but there's no one here. So why is there no one here in Mathura? Because when Krishna left, everyone left with him. Three types of people were there with Krishna. One were Krishna's eternal Nitya Siddha associates. So like Yashoda, Nanda. So they all went. They split when Krishna split. Then the next type of personalities that were there when Krishna was there were the demigods. The demigods had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty. But the Yadu dynasty finito, they had gone. So the demigods had also gone. And then the other ones who were there were the fortunate souls who were there to witness the pastimes of Krishna. But after Krishna left, they got the mercy and they also left. So there was no one. So Vajranab said, I'm okay, but there ain't no one here. There's no one in the kingdom. So Parikshit said, let's go to Shandilya Rishi to find some solution. So Shandilya Rishi came and met them. And then Shandilya Rishi said, okay, you got to do one thing. You got to excavate Vrindavan. You got to rebuild Vrindavan like what it was before. You've got to reveal all the places where Krishna performed his pastimes. And if you do that, then many, many people will come. And many, many people will come, not just now, but people will come for generations in the future to come and see where Krishna performed all his pastimes. People will come to see Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the playground of God. So Vajranab took that to heart. He said, okay. So he got the help of Vishvakarma and he started excavating all the places. Every kund, every river, every hill, every garden, every village, every single place where Krishna performed some activity, Vajranab revealed. This is Vrindavan and this is what happened in all these amazing places. So Vrindavan began to thrive again. Many, many people came to Vrindavan. And again, Krishna's playground, Vrindavan, was booming with many, many people. One day in Vrindavan, the queens of Dwarka came. Amongst all of the personalities that were feeling the separation of Krishna, probably amongst the most acute were the queens of Dwarka. So the queens of Dwarka came feeling so much separation. They came to Vrindavan. They met Vajranab. They were wondering, how can we mitigate our separation from Krishna? So one day the queens of Dwarka met Kalindi, another one of Krishna's wives. And she looked very happy. He said, like, you're Krishna's wife. We're Krishna's wives. Krishna has gone. We're feeling so much depression, but you seem to be okay. What's the secret? How have you mitigated your feelings of separation from Krishna? Kalindi said, look, when the gopis were feeling separation from Krishna, when they were plunged into acute feelings of unimaginable emotion at not seeing Krishna, then who did Krishna send to Vrindavan? Uddhav. And when the gopis met Uddhav, of course, they had many interesting exchanges and still the separation was in their heart. But when Uddhav came, Uddhav Sandesh with the message from Krishna, it went some way to relieving their heart. So Kalindi said to the queens of Dwarka, if you want to relieve your heart from the separation of Krishna, then what you have to do is hear Bhagavatam from Uddhav. So the queens of Dwarka said, great idea. But Uddhav, where is he? So Uddhav, Krishna instructed Uddhav the final instructions, Uddhav Gita, and then he told Uddhav to go to Badrik Ashram, Himalayas. So how will we go Himalayas? He said, don't worry. There's one other place where Uddhav resides. Uddhav doesn't just reside in Badrik Ashram. Uddhav resides in one other place. Where's the other place that Uddhav resides? When Uddhav came to see the gopis, he was so overcome by their love for Krishna. He said, I've never witnessed this kind of love in my life. He was so amazed by the gopis that he said, the gopis are my guru. The gopis are my gurus. And what I want to do, Asamaho charanare nujasam maham syam vrindavane kimapigul malato sadinam yodus chajam sajanamarya patam chahitva bejur mukunda padavim shruti bir vimrigyam. He prays. Aham aso charanare nujasam maham syam vrindavane kimapigul malato sadinam. Let me take birth as a creeper in Vrindavan, so that maybe, just maybe, the gopis will come off the main track and they'll step on me and I'll get the dust of their lotus feet. So Kalindi said, you can meet Uddhav. He's right here. He's right here in Vrindavan. We're in Vrindavan. Go to Govardhan. We're in Govardhan. Go to Kusum Sarova, just behind. Narad Muni, Uddhav is staying there as a creeper. So Parikshit, Vajranab, and all the queens of Vrindavan went. They went to that place, beautiful place, you can go there today. And they began a big kirtan. And as they arrived there, indeed, Uddhav manifested, looking just like Krishna. They were amazed. Immediately, just by seeing Uddhava and how much he resembled Krishna, immediately they were feeling somewhat pacified. But then the queens of Dwarka and Parikshit looked at Uddhava. Parikshit looked at Uddhava and requested, Uddhava, we want to hear Bhagavatam from you. Uddhava said, I can tell you Bhagavatam, no problem. Sit down. So they all sat down. And then Uddhava looked at Parikshit. Can you imagine? They were anticipating hearing Bhagavatam from Uddhava himself. So Parikshit said, thank you so much, Uddhava, for doing this, for agreeing. We're ready to hear. Is there anything we can do for you? Uddhava looked at Parikshit and he said, anything you can do for me, Parikshit? There's one thing you can do for me. While I do this katha of Srimad Bhagavatam, I want you, Parikshit, to go out into the kingdom and make sure Kali doesn't make any disturbance. Oh my God, why did I ask? Parikshit was thinking, here it is, Uddhava's going to speak Bhagavatam. And now I have to go and keep Kali away? Parikshit said, how? How can I go? How can I miss this opportunity to hear Bhagavatam from you? Uddhava said, don't worry, relax. I got it under control. In the future, another personality will come to you and you will hear Bhagavatam from that personality. And that conversation that you have will be so profound, so heart-touching, so incredibly exquisite and beautiful that that will be the Bhagavatam that we read for generations and generations and generations. So Parikshit was somewhat satisfied. He left. Uddhava began speaking Bhagavatam and all the queens of Dwarka became immersed in Bhagavatam. And the way it's described in Skanda Purana, Padma Purana, is that they became so absorbed in hearing Bhagavatam from Uddhava that as they were hearing Krishna Katha, Tava Katha, Mritam, Tapta Jivanam, all this wonderful Katha, in the middle of it somewhere, hearing that Katha, in the middle of that absorption, they just left the world. I mean, imagine, just like that. To leave immersed in the narrations of Bhagavatam, what better departure could there be? Just like Srila Prabhupada, who on his final days was just hearing Bhagavatam. So like this, Vajranab and Parikshit, by the instructions from Shandilya Rishi, re-excavated Vrindavan. Why am I saying all this? What's this got to do with today? Because another thing that Vajranab did was he didn't just excavate all the places where Krishna performed his pastimes, but he did one other major thing in Vrindavan, which is that he established 16 principal deities. Deities of Krishna. And these deities would then be worshipped for many, many years and generations to come. Because even though Krishna has left, he's still accessible in his deity form. So Vajranab established many, many amazing deities in Vrindavan. The three principal deities in Vrindavan are Madan Mohan, Gopinath, and Govinda. Now Vajranab had never met Krishna directly, but he had access to someone who did see Krishna. You know who that was? The personality who got saved by Krishna when Ashwatthama had released a Brahmastra, Uttara. Uttara had seen Krishna many times. So when Vajranab wanted to fashion a deity of Krishna, he went to Uttara and he said, can you describe how does Krishna look? If you describe to me how Krishna looks, then I can make the deity of Krishna. So Uttara made the description to Vajranab of how Krishna looks. And then he formed one deity. That deity was Madan Mohan. Looked exactly like Krishna from the navel down. Second deity he made was the deity of Govinda. Looked exactly like Krishna from the neck up face. Mukharavinda. And third deity, Gopinath. Beautiful deity. Looked exactly like Krishna, but from the navel to the neck. So these deities were then established. These deities in the Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition are such important deities. We have prayers for each one of these deities. To Madan Mohan we pray, Jayatam suratur pangur mama manda matergati mat sarvasva padam bojo radha madana mohano. One goes in front of Madan Mohan and says, O Krishna, I'm lame and ill-advised in my path of bhakti. I'm slipping again and again and again, and I'm being attracted by the allurements of maya every moment. You are Madan Mohan. You are the one who can attract even Cupid. So Madan Mohan, you steal my heart. We pray to Govinda. Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpadrumada Srimad Ratnagara Simhasanasto Shri Shri Radha Shri Lago Vindadevo Prishthali Bi Sevyamano Smarami. Meditating on how Govinda is worshipped on a beautiful throne. Govinda is smiling. And it's said that if one sees the face of Govinda, be careful. Because when you see the smiling face of Govinda, Smeram Bhangi Traya Parichitam Vishachivishtir Nadrishtim. If you see the smiling face of Govinda, you'll lose all your attraction for family, friendship, love and society. Because the smiling face of Govinda is exactly like Krishna. And to Gopinath we pray, Shri Manra Sarasarambi Vamshi Vatatastita Karshanvenu Svaner Gopi Gopinath Shri Eshtunaha. Gopinath is under a tree in Vrindavan, the Vamsivat. Gopinath has a very, very long flute. Garshan Venu Svaner Gopi. And with that flute, Garshan Venu Svaner Gopi, he's attracting the gopis. So these beautiful deities were established by Vajranab. Even today in the Padma Purana it said that if one wants the full darshan of Krishna, because now these deities are no longer in Vrindavan because of Muslim invasions. So Gopinath and Govinda ji are in Jaipur and Madan Mohan is in Karali. So it's said, according to tradition, that if you want to have the full darshan of Krishna, then you have to see all of these three deities in one day. So if you order a taxi driver and give him enough money, then he can transport you to Jaipur and Karali and you can see all the three deities in one day. And then it said that you've had the full darshan of Krishna because you've seen Krishna as it is, his face, neck to the navel and navel to the feet, complete darshan of Krishna. Many other deities were established by Vajranab, and one of the other deities that Vajranab established was the deity of Gopal. In different areas of Vrindavan, different deities were established. And the deity that was established in the village of Anior was the deity of Sri Gopal, Krishna who lifted Govardhan Hill. And of course there are many, many stories related to Gopal and later on how Gopal was rediscovered. And we won't go into that discussion now. If one wants to read about how Gopal was discovered, then in Shivaram Maharaj's book, Navavraja Mahima, I think the third volume, in the appendix, there's a very, very wonderful essay talking about how Sri Gopal or Srinathji was discovered. Because there's some debate. Was it discovered by Madhavendra Puri or was it discovered by Vallabhacharya? So this sampradayic debate goes on. But there in that essay, Shivaram Maharaj establishes how it is that Madhavendra Puri was indeed the person who discovered the Gopal deity. So Vrindavan went through these stages. It's said that there were basically three regenerations of Vrindavan. After Krishna left the world, there were three periods where Vrindavan was regenerated. The first regeneration of Vrindavan was Vajranab, number one. Later on, what happened is that there was a Muslim occupational government and many of the original deities were either driven away or smashed or other things. So the prominence of Vrindavan again went down. So then in the Gaudiya period, the period of Mahaprabhu, then we find the second regeneration of Vrindavan, which was initially done by Bhugarbha Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, and then later on the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, again brought Vrindavan up. And then the third regeneration of Vrindavan, we can say, was the regeneration that Srila Prabhupada created in Vrindavan. Because Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan for many years, 1959 to 1965, Prabhupada was a resident of Vrindavan, Radha Damodar Temple. But it was Prabhupada's desire that the whole world be invited to come to Vrindavan. And so Prabhupada left Vrindavan at the age of 69, at the age of 70, and he came to the West and he invited the whole world back to Vrindavan. And so the third regeneration of Vrindavan was inviting the whole world back to Vrindavan. And that was done by Srila Prabhupada. And it's because of Srila Prabhupada that we get access to Vrindavan. Nowadays, if you go to Vrindavan, then as you drive on the road to the Krishna Balaram temple, then there's a huge gate. And it's called the Prabhupada Gate. So if you want to go in to Vrindavan, you have to go through the Prabhupada Gate. So it's very wonderful because that reminds us that we have no access to Vrindavan. We have no access to Krishna's own land. We have no access to the playground of God, except through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So these deities were rediscovered by Madhavendra Puri. In this section it's explained that Madhavendra Puri received a dream, and in that dream Gopal came to him and said, because of the iconoclasts, the Muslim invaders who were against having any form of God, I've been hidden in the bush. And therefore, Madhavendra Puri, you come now and you rescue me and you install me. And Madhavendra Puri indeed did that. Of course, one can go to Aniyor village even today. It's a very, very beautiful place. And in Aniyor village, there's a place called Gopal Prakrita Stali. Right on the foot of Govardhan Hill, you can go to this temple even today. And if you go around the back, you can actually see the exact place where Madhavendra Puri discovered the Gopal deity. And from that vantage point, if you look at Govardhan Hill, then you can see the temple that was also built for Gopal. So this is all being described here. And also what's being described here is the amazing deity worship that was being conducted for Gopal by Madhavendra Puri and all the residents of Vrindavan. So now let's just bring it down to our level a bit. Here we're hearing all about the amazing items that were employed in the worship of the deity. Expensive items, valuable items, items that were very much sought after were used in the worship of the deity. So now let's just wait for a moment and question ourselves. Why do we do such opulent deity worship? What is the need? Why is that such an important part of devotional life? Okay, I do a thought experiment with everyone here. And in this thought experiment, you've got three options. And you have to choose one. And don't try and come out with a clever fourth option. You're in Vrindavan. You're about to go into the temple. Let's say the temple of Gopal, let's just say. And as you're walking into the temple of Gopal, you think to yourself, how can I go to the deity empty-handed? So you think, I must buy something for the deity, offer something to the deity. So you have 200 rupees in your pocket. And you decide to go and get a bottle of milk and offer that to Gopal. So you walk up to the shop, and as you're walking up to the shop, you see the bottle of milk that costs 200 rupees. Probably doesn't cost that much, but anyway. And as you're walking up and you see the bottle of milk that costs 200 rupees, you also see something else. You see someone starving. Option A. Spend the 200 rupees on a bottle of milk. Walk straight past the starving person. Go into the deity and offer the milk to Gopal. Option A. Option B. Give the two, buy the milk for 200 rupees. Offer it in your mind. Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri. And then give it to the starving person. Option C. Buy two smaller bottles of milk. Offer one of them in your head and give it to the starving person. And offer the other one in the temple to Gopal. Got it? What would you do? Who would do option A? And don't look at everyone else. Prabhupada said we have to be independently thoughtful. Option A, 200 rupees, take the milk, offer it to Gopal. Put your hands up. Godruma, David. Paradukaduki. Okay, good. So two, anyone from the lady's side? Is that a hand? That's not a hand. Doesn't know, she's okay. You have to vote, yeah? This is like, you have to vote. Okay, let's just start again, because you have to vote. You have to vote. You have to vote. One, two, or three. Option A, 200 rupees for the milk, straight to Gopal, put your hands up. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Sam's staying just for the vote. Option B, offer it in your mind, 200 rupees of milk straight to the person starving. You already voted for the first one. B, only one, two, three. Okay, everyone's warming up now. Any more takers? Three. So then I assume the rest of you will go for the middle option. Win-win. This is very, it's a very interesting thought. The reason I'm doing this is because we must understand, why are we worshipping the deity? Why are we worshipping the deity? And why are we worshipping the deity with such opulence? Okay, I'm going to do one other thing now. I'm going to play devil's advocate. Asura's advocate. Okay? So what I'm going to do, I just want to let everyone know online and for the recording that I am going into a role now. This is not me speaking. Otherwise we might get, Sutupa's gone off the rails, Deviating. I'm just playing a role here, but for a moment, I'm just going to play devil's advocate. And then I'm going to give you three chances to defeat me. Okay? Ladies, men, I'm going to give you three chances to defeat me. But this is my argument to you. My argument to all of you Vaishnavas who are worshipping the deities with so much money, with so much opulence, is that you're not doing something which is pleasing to Krishna. Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachiti. All I need is a leaf, flower, fruit or water. I only need something small. What I really need is your love. So Krishna doesn't actually want anything that opulent. What he wants is love. What Krishna is more concerned about is the living entities. Because later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nachatasman manusheshu kashkin me priyakritama. There's no one more dear to me than that person that helps other people. So why are you spending so much money worshipping the deity? Why don't you spend all of that money to try and help people? Why are you spending all this amazing resource, yogurt, milk, ghee, honey, sugar, pouring it over a deity? Wouldn't Krishna be more happy if you use all of that, put it in a pot, make some halva and feed some person who's starving? Your own scriptures say this, because the Padma Purana says, Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. You know what the topmost worship is? Padma Purana says, Vishnu aradhanam, to worship Vishnu is the topmost. But you know what, Devi? Even higher than worshipping Vishnu is to worship his devotees. So why are you spending all this on worshipping the deities? Why don't you just worship the devotees? Why don't you just worship the people? Why don't you just be paradukaduki, like what a Vaishnava is supposed to be, and stop wasting so much money unnecessarily worshipping the deity? You can give something to Krishna. Give him a few oranges. Give him a few flowers. Just do it with love. He accepts it. Save all the rest of the money and help the people. Surely that's more spiritual. Let me give you one final quotation from the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, where it's mentioned, Tapyante lokata pena sadavo prayasojana paramara dhanam taddi purushasya kilat manaha. It's said in this verse that great personalities worship Krishna. How? By taking on difficulty to serve other people. Param aradhanam tadi. The greatest worship you can do is to serve other people. So my question to you, my dear friends, is why are you spending so much money worshipping the deity? We're not saying don't worship the deity, but what we're saying is conduct a very simple worship and instead save all of that money and serve the people. Because surely that will be more pleasing to Krishna. Om Tat Sat. So I give you 3 chances to defeat me. Any takers? Okay, David, defeat me.
Krishna is happy, everyone will be happy.
If Krishna is happy, everyone's happy. So you're going to go into the temple, offer the 200 rupees milk to Krishna, and come out, and when that man is starving, tell him, don't worry, you'll be happy. You'll be happy, my friend. Krishna is happy. No, I'm playing a role here, so don't take offense. Okay, so, I mean, someone may say that. Come on, it's a nice statement, but get real, my friend. Get real, my friend. There are people suffering out there. I mean, it's real. It's happening. Let's face it, even in today's climate, in Western world, because of all this lockdown and all, people don't even have food. But are we going to say, don't worry, the deities are being worshipped, everything's going to be okay for you? I don't know. I'm just kind of putting it out there. All right, we'll go to the ladies' side. Anyone there want to defeat? Of course, we're not here to defeat each other, but... Yeah, is that a... Want to have a go? Okay, Jagat Priya Mataji. You need to use the mic, because otherwise they can't hear online.
It's not working. Okay. So, I would go also a little bit in the same way, like he's saying, but also then we... What was your point?
Why are you spending so much money worshipping the deity?
Yeah, so because Krishna, he deserves it, you know, he deserves it. And he is a person, he is a real person who is in charge of everything. And he will look also after everyone else. So if you do worship him, you will also look after him personally. Very nice. So he is just the right person to worship. You know, and he deserves
Krishna
everything.
Krishna deserves it.
Yes.
I mean, do Krishna's sons and daughters also deserve it?
Yes. And as sons and daughter, you need to worship also. You need to be a devotee of your...
So you need to do both. So you'd go for the 100-100 option. 100%. Bit of milk for the starving person, a bit of milk for...
No.
Everything for Krishna.
And everyone else, like you person, you also, you need to be a devotee of Krishna, and he will look after you as very, very nicely. You know? Yes.
Thank you. Oh, Gaudrima Prabhu. Okay, we've got some more heavyweight arguments coming in. Bring in the heavy.
Okay, so anyway, thank you very much for... You've kept everybody awake. No one.
I'm trying to keep myself awake.
Some were nodding off, but now they're fully awake. I've got Sundarananda Prabhu. He's putting some points forward.
Oh, Sundarananda Prabhu,
yeah,
okay.
So he's saying that... he's saying that... Also, the opulence attracts. So I think he means that, like Srila Prabhupada, you know, why doesn't he just practice under a tree? Rather, why did he establish all these big opulent temples and do elaborate deity worship? That is to attract the conditioned souls to come. And then he says, we are giving them by helping their souls, you know. That means that Krishna consciousness is the highest welfare activity because people are suffering due to lack of Krishna consciousness. So they perform activities that put them into suffering condition. So you can feed somebody one day, that's nice, you know, and you can feed them. But if you actually deal with the root cause, then they, by giving them Krishna consciousness and Krishna conscious knowledge, then it frees them from doing those activities
will bring them in another... So I'm going to debate with Sundarananda since he can't reply to me. I got a full license to take his arguments out.
So there's.
Let me just reply to that one first. Okay, so I understand. Feed a man for a day, you know, but you know, teach him to dig a well. You can do it for the whole life. I understand these arguments, but let's face it. I mean, better to feed someone for one day than not feed them at all, right? I mean, can we not do something? The point I'm making here is that it's not even my argument. I'm saying give them prasadam.
No.
I'm saying give them spiritual benefit.
Yeah.
I'm saying give them something that will help them get closer to Krishna. Why worship the deity? Why not spend that resource connecting them to Krishna in a better way, which will directly address their material situation at the same time? Surely that's a win-win. Because also Krishna himself is saying, Param aradhanam tadhi purushasya kilatmanaha. Better than worshipping. Krishna himself is saying, don't worship me. Jagat Priya is saying Krishna deserves it. But Krishna himself is saying, I don't want it. Worship my devotees, I'm more pleased.
So it's not either we help somebody out there with some prasadam or something, or we worship the deities. It's both. Because like...
You're going to do the 100-100, yeah?
No, so, yeah, so like you, the first example, you're saying, okay, you get the 200 rupees and you get the milk, so then you offer it to the deity, and once the deity has accepted, it's been marked prasad, you go and give it, you know?
Okay.
And then...
Take them the mango sweets. Okay, but what about all of this resource? That's like, this is just like bathing Krishna, all of this money for flowers. It's like, I mean, the man's starving. It's like, okay, here's some flowers, smell it. I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, so
you see what I'm saying? So like...
So the thing is, if you just practice your Krishna consciousness under a tree, then not many people will be attracted to come. So we're trying to teach in Krishna consciousness, give Krishna consciousness people. So that's why Srila Prabhupada established very opulent temples and opulent worship to attract conditioned souls so they can come and learn, they can take prasadam. And we also have...
No, but I'm not saying don't have a center. Have a center, teach them. I mean, school of bhakti, go for it.
Don't promote your own center.
It's money for deity worship. Okay, all right. There's lots of hands. I need to get myself out of this hole, you know. Otherwise, I may never get asked to give class again. I may get criticized on the internet. I mean, you know, things happen in Kali Yuga. Can I just close this and then I'll just open for questions? Is that okay? That would be an easier way to do it? Is that okay, yeah? I mean, I need to get out of here alive, you know? So, okay, let me just try to... all of what you've said is, of course, you're all Vaishnavas, so of course, but it's true. Okay, let's just... oh my God, I've gone way over time. It's already 8:40. Okay. Rathaji, I'll come back to you in a second. I'll come back to you in a second, Rathaji. Just give me 1 second, yeah? Let me just speak a few things and then I'll come back. Why does deity worship even get introduced in the world in the first place? That's an interesting point. And the Bhagavatam is so amazing that there are verses that sometimes you come back and you thought, oh my God, I never realized, I never remember that verse. In the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, this is a good reference, 7:14:39. Okay? This is a section where Narad Muni is talking about ideal grihastha life. And when talking about ideal grihastha life, then he's talking about deity worship. And in this verse, Narad Muni explains why we do deity worship. Why deity worship was even introduced in the first place. Do you want to know why deity worship was introduced? Firstly, does anyone know when deity worship was introduced? When? Which previous age? Dwapa. Anyone, any other takers? Kali Yuga. Kali? Dwapa? It was the Yuga Dharma in Dwarpa. So it got to be before Krishna went, because it was the Yuga Dharma in Dwarpa, but it was introduced in Treta. Why was it introduced? Here it is, the answer. Drishtvate sham mitho nrinam avagyanat matam nripa treta dichuharer archa kriyaya ekavibhi krita. This is fascinating. My dear king, this is Narad speaking to Yudhisthira. When great sages and saintly persons saw mutually disrespectful dealings at the beginning of Treta Yuga, deity worship in the temple was introduced with all paraphernalia. It's fascinating. I'll read it again. When the sages saw that there were mutually disrespectful dealings between living entities, they decided to introduce the worship of the deity. That's amazing. Why was deity worship introduced? I mean, it's an amazing purport by Prabhupada as well, but we don't have time. Because people were mutually disrespectful, insensitive, basically committing offenses to each other, committing violence and cruelty to each other, the worship of the deity was introduced. Now, who can make the link? How does worship of the deity mitigate disrespectful dealings amongst living entities? Lots of hands again. I'll just answer it, because if we go interactive, it will take too much time. There could be many answers, but two things come to my mind. The first thing is, when you're worshipping the deity, the first thing you have to develop is sensitivity. Have you noticed that when you're doing pujari service, how sensitive and conscious you have to be about everything? The time, the cleanliness, the how, you know, every little bit of detail. So what deity worship helps to do amongst us is develop a sensitivity within us of how we're dealing with other entities. And when we begin to worship the deity and become sensitive towards the deity, then we end up being more sensitive towards people around us. But the deeper reason is that when we worship Krishna, when we connect with Krishna, when we worship Krishna with all resource with our heart, then what we do is we develop spiritual vision. And with that spiritual vision, when we then go out and see all the living entities, we don't just see bodies, but we see bodies with Krishna right there inside of them. Pandita Samadarshin. And when you have that vision, then you can actually deal with people appropriately. So while it may seem that deity worship, what we're not doing anything to help the world through deity worship. Deity worship, as has been mentioned, is actually getting to the root of the problem, because when we worship deities with all opulence, with all sensitivity, with all resource, then that creates a deeper solution to the world's problems, because what it does is it engenders a consciousness of Krishna. The reason why we're insensitive towards others is because we're insensitive towards Krishna. The reason we commit offenses towards others is because we're offensive towards Krishna. The reason why we're envious of others is because we're envious of Krishna. And by worshipping the deity, we basically rewire our whole consciousness. And once you've actually purified yourself in that way, then you can actually deal with people appropriately. But what the Gaudiya Acharyas have done is they've told us, don't just worship the deity and don't just reject the deity and serve the people. Do both side by side. Bhagavat Vidhi, Pancharatrik Vidhi. And therefore, the ultimate answer is, maybe the best thing to do is 100 rupees for the two small ones. One to Krishna, Pancharatrik Vidhi. And at the same time, the Vaishnav is compassionate to those around them. Because one extreme is that we don't develop a personal connection with Krishna and we serve people materially. And the other extreme is that you just worship the deity and we don't worship the people. Krishna says, if you worship the deity, but you don't see that I'm in the hearts of all living entities, then you're a Prakrita Bhakta. This is explained in 11th canto. So I hope I've saved it. We hear of all this opulent deity worship, and sometimes people may criticize that, why aren't you guys doing something practical for the people, practical for the world? So our answer is, yes, we do something practical for the world. We do prasadam distribution, we do food for life, we do all kinds of activities to help people in their suffering conditions, but we also worship the deity with all opulence. Because by worshipping the deity with all opulence and training the whole world to do that, then what we help everyone to do is enter into a very personal and dynamic exchange and love for Krishna, and that change of vision that people will have is what will create the biggest change in the world. And therefore, if we're ever wondering why we spend so much time worshipping the deities and why we spend so much resource doing it, this is the reason as given by Narad Muni to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Hare Krishna. So, I guess it's late. But yeah, we can take a couple of comments if there is, yeah, or questions. But I hope no one's confused.
Thank you very much for the nice lecture. And so You said that we, when we worship deities, we develop spiritual vision. So this is my question for you. Who is more poor? A man who doesn't have what to eat, or a rich man who has many food? Who is more poor?
Yes. Kaviraj Goswami says, Prema dhana vinavyartha daridra jivan, dasa kori vetan more deha prema dhan. Daridra jivan. Jivan means the soul, and daridra means very poor. So he says, who is a daridra jivan? Who is a poor soul? Prema dhana vinavyartha, the one who has no love for Krishna, is a poor soul. Therefore, dasa kori vetan more deha premadan, make me your servant. And for my only wage, I ask that you give me some love for Krishna. So yes, who is really poor? The one who has no spiritual wealth, no spiritual connection with Krishna. And so that's the point.
Yeah, and also,
but still, we must, as Vaishnavas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was in Vrindavan, and he said to his disciples, if you see a poor person, you must give something. You may not give money, you must give something. Because what will happen is, if people are suffering and we don't do anything, we will develop a hard heart.
Yeah.
So sometimes we may say someone's a poor person.
Yeah, but when we go to Vrindavan, we see many poor people, and we cannot give for all
so
of them,
not,
isn't
but,
it?
But as far as possible. The main thing is, we should feel people suffering, even if we can't do something. But what can very easily happen is that, I remember when I was young, I never wanted to go into central London because I hated to see homeless people. I just couldn't handle it. It was just too much for my mind. Later on, I went to university in London and I saw homeless people every day. And after some months, I realized I was just walking past them with no second thought of what they're going through. Now, does it mean every homeless person you walk past, you have to give them something? Well, if you can give something, that's good. But at the very minimum, a Vaishnav should feel uncomfortable. That why should a soul have to go through this? We should feel the pain. So while we're not into material welfare work, at the same time, we should feel the pain of the people. Because a Vaishnav is paradukha dukhi. And the more spiritual vision we have, we'll feel more pain for people. So actually, if you're actually worshipping the deities properly, then when you see people suffering, you'll feel the need to do something. So that's the point I'm making. Yes, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. So thank you, Prabhu. That was very relevant topic. And I remember my experience in Vrindavan when I was much younger.
Yeah.
And I was taking parikramas with His Holiness Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami. And of course, Vrindavan is full of beggars and all. And I've noticed that Maharaj was giving donations to everyone who was approaching him. But not only that, he was telling us, you should give donations as well. And I was annoyed after a while, and I actually asked Maharaj, why do we have to give to everyone? And his reply, I remember for life. He said, everyone got to live. Everybody got to live, so I thought, okay, that completely defeated my objection. But the question is that the entire ISKCON is so focused on deity worship.
Yeah.
And yet we see a lot of what this verse is mentioning from 7:14:39, a lot of disrespect, a lot of clashing, and a lot of heartlessness amongst the devotees, you know, like cold heart, steel framed hearts. So a lot of deity worship and a lot of the other side. So how these two sides can coexist and what can we do about it?
Thank you so much for the challenging question. No, that's wonderful. And actually, and perhaps this is a good point to end on. If we read Prabhupada's purport to this verse, it's an incredible purport. But basically, Prabhupada makes this exact point. He's making the point, he's quoting this verse that we quoted, Archayam eva hariye pujam ya shradaye hate, that one who worships the deity but doesn't see Krishna within all living entities is a materialistic person. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, a prakriti devotee is still on the material platform. He certainly engages in worshipping the deity, but he cannot appreciate activities of a pure devotee. It has actually been seen that even an authorized devotee who is engaged in the service of the Lord by preaching the mission of Krishna consciousness is sometimes criticized by neophyte devotees. And then later on, elsewhere in the purport, Prabhupada makes the point. He says, deity worship began in Treta Yuga and was especially prominent in Dwapara Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, worship of the deity is being neglected. Therefore, chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is more powerful than deity worship. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set a practical example in that he did not establish any temples or deities, but he profusely introduced the Sankirtan movement. Therefore, Krishna consciousness preachers should give more stress to the Sankirtan movement, especially by distributing transcendental literature more and more. Wherever there is possibility to worship the deity, we may establish centers, but generally we should give more stress to the distribution of transcendental literature. So even in this verse, it's saying the introduction of deity worship. In the purport, Prabhupada's making the point that what we really need to do is Pancharatrik and Bhagavat Marg side by side. In Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's math, he had a rule that it didn't matter what service you were doing, everyone went out to knock three doors every day, I think, something like that, to distribute the message of Chaitanya Dev. Because if one is only worshipping the deity, there could be a chance that again they don't develop that sensitivity towards other living entities. There is a chance. And therefore, the way I think we have to balance it is, as Prabhupada is saying, by not putting the entire stress of the Krishna consciousness movement on deity worship, but to encourage every single person in the temple that we must go out. We must go out and see what people are going through and feel the need to go and help them. Because when you do that and you worship the deity side by side, then we will overcome this coldness, this hard-heartedness, and this insensitivity towards the world. So we must be the most compassionate people in the world, but as you mentioned, sometimes devotees can also, we can become very callous. So we must become soft-hearted, and that happens when we embrace Bhagavat Marg and Pancharatrik Marg side by side. It's 9 o'clock. So maybe we can continue on another time, otherwise it can go on and on. Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the wonderful class, very thought-provoking. And on this topic, so currently we're stuck here, right? We can't go out anywhere. And we're not able to go out. And but I've seen Parashram is doing so many things now.
Yes.
But Parashram is not here anymore, so he's doing something separately, right? Yeah. So what can we do? Because we've got all this land here. I heard that we're not even planting this year because there's no one to do it. So what can we do? We're in the temple. We have Mahaprasadam, so much Mahaprasadam every day. So much prasadam, opulent prasadam, rich prasadam. It's too rich for us, really. We'll all just get fat. But are we able to even go out? Do we even like?
Yes.
And in must. The village here, you know, these village, we had so much conflict with these villagers over the years. They don't like us because of the road and da da da. So now, I mean, is there any possibility we can
it's
start?
Very
to
wonderful. Thank you so much for raising this. And I think, you know, the last few weeks have been pretty turbulent in terms of just getting all the devotees healthy, getting the temple functioning according to the new systems that we have. We hope that if all the devotees can stay healthy, it would be wonderful if we can all come together and think about what more we could be doing for all the suffering people outside of this building. Of course, we are already doing things online and we're trying to preach and share the message of Krishna in different ways. But I think it's a wonderful idea we could be doing more in the village. You know, like we could all have a list of 10, 15 people that we're calling up every day to make sure they're okay, how they're doing. We have to just get in the mood of being compassionate. And you're right, I think there are many, many things we can do. So let's hope everything calms down. It has calmed down and it stays calm. And then I think in the coming weeks, because it looks like this is a prolonged thing, apparently it's now until May, I heard, right? So it'd be wonderful to think, what more can we be doing to help the world situation? Because that is what Vaishnavas do. We have to be more outward looking as well. So now we've managed to secure things at the temple. I think that's the next stage. And we just had a temple council meeting this week. And we're looking at how to now roll out programs to the NHS staff in Watford and other hospitals so that we can supply prasadam to all the frontline workers who are so selflessly, you know, it's like we can say, oh, well, you know, material welfare work, mundane welfare work, but just imagine the sacrifice of all those NHS workers who are out there in the hospital putting their own life on the line. I don't know, like, whether we'd be ready to do that, you know. So that's an amazing level of selflessness to, so we can do something, and we're planning, and we should plan more.
I spoke to Vishaka because I was told that there's no planting going on. So, you know, yeah. If we're not planting there, everyone's having food shortages. We're then dependent on the supermarkets. Prabhupada yes. didn't want that. Yes. Prabhupada wanted us to be self-sufficient as much as possible. But I, on the other hand, you know, I'm only here because you gave me a book. I mean, you gave me 24, I think I gave you 24p for it or something like that. I didn't have any money.
You so, owe me the rest. I'm still waiting for the rest of that donation.
But I mean, and you're doing these online classes, so I'm sure we're all doing, you know, you're especially doing as much as you can, but...
No, we must do more. Yeah, we must. Prabhupada always was thinking, how much Prabhupada was concerned about the world. It was Prabhupada who saw in Mayapur some kids who were searching around the bins. And Prabhupada just felt so much compassion. He said, no one within 10 miles radius of a temple should go hungry. That was Prabhupada. It was Prabhupada who was in a car in Australia and they were stuck in a traffic jam at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Prabhupada said, why in the world is there a traffic jam at 6 o'clock in the morning? The devotee said, because in Australia, people work so far away from their work that they have to leave this early to get to work and then they come back very late. As Prabhupada heard all of this, a teardrop fell from his eye. Prabhupada said, they're working so hard. For what? They're working so hard. For what? That was Prabhupada's compassion. So how can we say we're followers of Srila Prabhupada if we don't have that compassion and concern for the world? So yes, let us think more and more, what can we do? The world needs more Vaishnavas to come forward and be more selfless and giving so we can actually make a positive change.
And also we start to think more of others. We stop fighting between ourselves more as well.
Yeah.
Because that energy is used in the proper way.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've gone way over time. Thank you so much for your patience and apologies if I said anything wrong. I mean, I'm just trying to instigate the conversation and the editors of this class can edit out, you know, all the non-Siddhantic elements of my class. Thank you very much. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.